Good morning. Welcome into Husker Max today, April 28th, 2025. Spring football is over. Baseball's got a few weeks left trying to extend a season. There's a lot going on there that went right for the Huskers over the weekend. We got a taste of the Husker games. We will look at that as well as the NFL draft. A couple of Huskers taken over those 3 days. Several others signing undrafted free agent deals. A few more still on the board that I haven't seen deals come out of. One of them for sure I thought would have found a home by now, but we're going to start with the Husker games. And Nick Handley, I know you weren't able to be there because you were on the East Coast watching some baseball at a slow pitch softball park. But like, were you able to hear anything from people back here? Were you able to kind of pick up on the feelings for the Husker games from the equipment sale? There were food trucks. Runza had their breakfast Runza out there, which I think was a good draw. And then you had the flag football. You had Dylan Raiola almost having a non-contact injury in flag football. You had the actual football portion of it with the Husker football players. You had soccer in the middle of the afternoon and then volleyball in the evening. And we'll get to volleyball a little bit later as well, because that place was rocking. But while you were clear out there by the Atlantic, what were you able to glean over the weekend from people and just kind of what they were saying about it?
Well, it started with, and mind you, Maryland had their spring game going on, but you wouldn't really know.
Was it a similar attendance?
this was funny. We were supposed to be playing right on top of it. We're going to be 2 hours apart from it, but then we had the 2 hour additional delay because of lightning in the area. But they're like, we're still going to play the football game anyway. So I think they just wanted to get it over with.
Nobody's here.
Exactly. They had a big fest going on Maryland days where it must be a big horticulture university as well, because there was a lot of plants, a lot of dill plants being handed out. I thought that was more popular than the football game. On Saturday or whatever they were trying to put out there. But it was,
take that, SVP.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, crab cakes and football, not always what Maryland does. It's more like dill plants, I guess.
Yeah.
But the first thing that I was inundated with on Saturday was how popular, and this didn't surprise me, but how popular the garage sale was, and the line that went all the way out to Ainsworth. As far as how many people were waiting. Yeah. I mean, people were getting there at 4 a.m. and they still weren't the first ones through the door. And kind of a really cool backstory, I thought, that was put out by the World Herald yesterday on just the overall process of getting that all situated, which I think, and Caleb, I know there's so many different parts that you bring up there of the Husker games. It seemed like, without question, that was probably the most popular an anticipated part of Saturday, was getting to the Hawks Championship Center so you could get the gear and you could get everything from stuff from back in the 90s, the amount to, did you get something? Oh, okay. See, there you go. What number do we got?
We've got a 33.
Wow.
Here's the thing.
That's pretty sweet.
This would have been a senior year Mike Fox jersey. He didn't play his senior year. This was the 2012-2013 season. This was a specialty jersey. Wisconsin wore special jerseys for this game as well. It was at the Bob Devaney Sports Center. In the last 6.5 minutes, 13 total points were scored. We found the exact game. We found the exact game that this jersey is from.
That is Big Ten basketball at its finest right there.
13 total points, 3 for Nebraska. Huskers lose 47-41.
Yes. Welcome to the big. That's a relic right there, my man. That is great stuff. Yeah. So that amongst
and because I posted to social media, I DM'd with Mike Fox a little bit yesterday.
Oh, nice. That's cool.
And I told him that we found the exact game, 47-41. He goes, "Some things don't change."
I thought maybe he would make you an offer to try to get the jersey, but
if it had his nameplate on it, I would have made a deal with him.
Yeah.
I would have absolutely, like, if it had the nameplate, as a former student athlete, I know how hard it is to not at this level, but to hang on to the gear that you have over your time. Uh-huh. You want to take all of it, and sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. I would have made a deal with Mike Fox, but it doesn't have the nameplate, so he wasn't really, like, that ultimately that interested in it. But yeah, we'll get into the gear sale and some of the other stuff that people found and some of the what I'm calling very greedy people that came out of it. But go ahead. You're talking about the Omaha World Herald story.
And looking at the skin tone, buddy. And I should talk too. May can't come soon enough. Meat season can't come soon enough there, Caleb. But yeah, I mean, that was such a popular thing is knowing that people were coming into Lincoln the night before, staying in a hotel so they could be early through the doors, I thought was really fascinating. And usually you would hear that similar stories about people that were anticipating the spring game itself, you know, people coming from western part of the state, even from out of the state, to get into Lincoln Friday night so they can go watch the game. So dare I say the most popular thing on Saturday was the gear sale, which, cool, that's great, because we've talked about this a lot of what would people think about it and what could be expected. I think the Midland women's 7-on-7 team or flag football team definitely put on a show, but then you get Dylan Riley.
Bears?
Right, exactly. I mean, shutout. I mean, it's not even the 60 points they put up. It's the shutout that they put up. But, you know, I think that was interesting. That seemed to get a lot of response, especially when Dylan tried to help out the Nebraska squad and play a couple snaps. But as far as the football part of it itself and the actual 11-on-11, what we're used to seeing, this was just, and again, I had other things going on when it came to baseball and I'm in a completely different Big Ten city. That seemed to be maybe the thing least talked about, in my opinion, because, and I understand why, these were not necessarily your major impact players for 2025 that were going head to head. Now there's some future guys. I think it was cool to see TJ Latif out there, but as far as the guys that were having the majority of the reps, these aren't the guys that you expect to be major players in 2025 and trying to bolster this season and try to have that year three breakthrough year for Matt Rhule. So I think that's why it was tamped down a little bit. But the thing I loved about it, and this what I heard a lot of on social media as well, is the overall personality of the entire event, where I don't, and we could have an entire show dedicated on Dylan Raiola, how he continues to just be the face of this franchise, because that's what college football is now, face of this program, but is everywhere and seems to genuinely want to be everywhere and want to really embrace this, which I think is amazing. But you get to see the personalities of the linemen, you know, in the speed contest. And so as quirky and as maybe forced as some of those little skilled competitions seem, more than anything, I think it shows the personality, the roping part of it. I mean, there were so many different things and so many unique elements, but I think the commonality of all of it is it got to show more personality with this program, which I think when you are trying to endorse these kids, and if you're the university and you're trying to continue that revenue stream to come through, and you're getting guys that are going to be marketable, and you want some of those people that are attending these games, and you want them to see that Nebraska has these student athletes, and not only are they good football players and great athletes, but they're fun. Like, this guy wants to win a roping contest. This guy wants to win a wing eating contest. This guy thinks he's the fastest man, and he's nowhere near it, but he's giving it his all. You know, it shows the personality, and I think in this day and age, the more personal connection you can have with those student athletes when it comes to a revenue share standpoint or a collective or NIL standpoint, and you can continue to feel like you're a lot more connected and getting more access to the program, I think that's a big part of that push forward. And so I think Saturday served many purposes. You made some money with a lot of the different gear sale and everything. You made some money with the tickets. I mean, all of that goes hand in hand. But I think it's a world right now where we're some people that have the means to do it that are interested in donating to the program, are interested in maybe helping pull in more talent for the football program. Sometimes it's tough to open up that wall a little bit without actually knowing some of the players or knowing what they're all about. And so for me personally, I think Saturday showcased all of that. You got your football, which was great. You got the community involvement, if you will, and a chance to get some really cool stuff at a heavily discounted price, which I think is awesome too. But you also have a chance to see these guys in their own element. I mean, we see videos all the time during spring ball, during mat drills, during fall practice, the chasing three element gives you a chance to know a little bit more about them. And I thought that that was a great, that was a stroke of genius, because we've seen so many college football programs kind of taking on that similar approach that Hard Knocks does, where one of the reasons Hard Knocks is so popular is because you get inside to the program and not necessarily, oh, you get to hear a coach yelling or addressing his team. No, you get to learn more about these players, a little bit more about their families, but more than anything, how they engage with one another and what type of overall sense of humor they might have in certain situations. And the more examples you get of that, you feel more connected to those student athletes. You feel like you know them a lot more. And I don't know about you, and we are, Caleb's got some technical issues going on, so we're just going to keep rolling here. But as far as everyone listening and watching, I don't know about you. When it comes to me, I'm someone who, if I'm going to open up my checkbook, if I'm going to be able to pay people or want to donate my hard-earned money and be able to say, here's a check, or here's to this collective or to this university, I want this to go to football, or I want this to go to softball or baseball or volleyball. I have a tough time doing that without really knowing what that current team's about. And so I don't know if that was even discussed on the type of events to have on the Husker games on Saturday. But I think there is an element to that where it allows the fans that have been so loyal, especially to this football program in some tough times as of late, it's a chance to reward the fans, not only with a chance to get, you know, the Adidas stuff and the gear and everything from the garage sale, but also to see these players and these student athletes in their element. And it creates more fun. And I think of a lot of the young kids that went to that game, or that went to the events on Saturday, that walked away feeling like they probably have a better feel for their hero or the guy that they look up to, as opposed to the guy that they just see in a helmet every Saturday kicking ass. So I like that element. Again, I don't know if that was the intention or not, but I just think that there is something to be said about being able to have that personality on display, which I think Saturday also showed. Caleb is going to be joining us here. He's having some computer issues, so he's going to jump on his laptop. So I know we're going to get to volleyball. We're going to get to baseball. We're going to talk more about the NFL draft. I want to say this, and hopefully Caleb will jump in on this too. This is, it involves the draft, and it's the Shedeur Sanders part of the draft that I know there was a lot of people, and it wasn't just Nebraska fans, because they really they gave Shedeur a lot of film that probably wasn't used in the highlight package. It was probably the "this is why he fell to the fifth round" package, even though I don't think he should have fallen that far. But the reaction on all fronts of this thing is one of the most fascinating things that I have seen. And I'll say this, when I was watching the NFL draft and that slide continued with Shedeur Sanders and the talking heads, mainly ESPN, because I was watching that coverage in my hotel room, the amount of shock and awe and trying to build this into a historical, by a landslide, a historical draft slide and event, to me was laughable. And the only reason I say that is, now, Shedeur Sanders is not a fifth round draft pick, even though that's what it's going to say when you go through his Wikipedia or his profile. He will be selected in the fifth round of the 2025 draft from the Cleveland Browns, which, wow, what a quarterback room they have. If you know, sometimes you, when you get drafted, you want to feel like you're going to an organization that has a plan for what they're doing with you. Does anybody feel that the Browns have a plan at quarterback? They're just throwing stuff at the wall and hoping something will stick. Or you could just say, you could be a positive person and say, boy, they're just really trying to create competition. But yeah, good luck with that. But anyway, this whole idea that this is a historical slide and this is something that is just, is unprecedented, I think is a bit off the mark, because I think there was a hype machine behind the type of quarterback that Shedeur Sanders was going to be. And I think, I don't feel like I'm breaking any news here. If he wasn't Deion Sanders' son, if he wasn't Shedeur Sanders, if he was Shedeur Johnson and he played for Colorado and he had the record he did at Colorado, despite throwing to a very impressive talent, Travis Hunter. Would this have really been the most historical slide that we've ever seen? If you just take the personality, the amount of hype, and that nameplate off the back of that jersey, would this even be a story? And my answer is no. So for the Mel Kipers out there, and even guys that I respect like Joel Klatt, for all those people out there that were just up in arms and trying to gas this thing up as the biggest upset in NFL draft history, or in some people's mind, Mel Kipers, one of the biggest shameful acts by all 32 teams in NFL draft history. Come on, what are we really doing? The only reason that this was a story is because of who he is, the family that he represents. It had nothing to do with the quarterback play itself. I think if you go in the first two rounds, you should be an elite college quarterback. I don't think Shedeur Sanders was an elite college quarterback. Carried himself that way. People gassed him up that way. But he wasn't an elite college football quarterback. So was I shocked that he dropped as far as he did to fifth in the fifth round? Yeah. But as far as, I mean, this narrative was being pushed after day one, that they were shocked, absolutely shocked, that Shedeur Sanders did not go in the first round. And then early in the second, you could see Mel Kiper getting just more and more frustrated. It was just, to me, one of the more, I think one of the more manufactured stories that I have seen when it comes to the NFL draft on something that was being considered one of the biggest NFL draft slides we've ever seen, where I think, you know what, if you just take the nameplate off, was that really the biggest slide we've ever seen? If it was just a Colorado quarterback that had a 500 record in 2 years, nobody would give a hoot, and you wouldn't even know if he went the third round, the fourth, or the fifth. It just kind of exhausting. So, Caleb, when you were gone, I was saving some of the Nebraska stuff. I had to get the whole Shedeur Sanders thing off my chest. Very, very upset about the way ESPN drove this thing into the biggest upset that we've ever seen, or the biggest travesty or slide we've ever seen in NFL draft history, which to me is bullcrap. It had everything to do with the name on the back and nothing to do with a guy who's a good quarterback, but in my mind, not an elite quarterback.
Yeah, it was, and I'm sorry about the delay because I'm no longer hooked up with an Ethernet. We're rocking the Wi-Fi via the laptop setup here. But you're right. If his last name wasn't Sanders, if he wasn't Deion's kid, like the entire narrative around Shedeur Sanders would have been wildly different on Thursday and Friday, and then ultimately when he selected on Saturday. I think that's the part that a lot of opposing fan bases got a lot of joy in over the weekend with that slide. That said, like, and I know there are some people that, okay, he should have been he was the number one quarterback. Okay, if that's how you feel, that's how you feel. Mostly that's Colorado and ESPN people.
Yep.
If you thought he was a second to third rounder, okay, then he did slide a little bit. You thought he was going to go a little bit there, and then ultimately he goes later in the draft. As a matter of fact, I had a story up on HuskerMax.com with the interesting comparison that our friend Eric Hess, Arbitrary Analytics, found that Nebraska has a connection to having their jersey retired immediately after the season and then sliding a couple of rounds in the NFL draft. For Nebraska, that was Tom Trainwreck Novak back in 1950, and he goes in the fourth round. Well, the fourth round was pick number 44 at the time.
Right.
Not pick number 100, whatever he went, you know, in the fifth round. So that, like, it was fun to find the connections with that as things started to happen. But you're right. If you don't have the last name Sanders, it changes the entire narrative on where everything was. It was bad journalism. It was bad TV. It was everything around it. Said you're in the pockets of something. I will say this, though. There were a lot of people that hate watched on Friday that maybe wouldn't. There were a lot of people that hate watched on Saturday that maybe wouldn't. ESPN should have been fueling that fire instead of leaning so hard into people going, no, we don't like the way you're covering this. I think there are a lot of people, if they had the option, that between ESPN, the ESPN ABC broadcast, or NFL Network, they were going NFL Network because NFL Network was covering it correctly. They were giving proper kudos to the players getting drafted. They didn't just hang a bunch of guys out to dry because every single pick became whether or not you took Shedeur Sanders. The reality of it is he's got a slow release back there. He's not ultra mobile. Can he improve those things? Absolutely. When he gets into a professional setting, maybe he rises to the challenge. Great. Good for him. Those are the things that you're hoping young people do in whatever their profession is. But ultimately, there's only a few places, there's only a few teams that were going to want a backup quarterback anyway. They weren't going to bring Shedeur in to be a starter. And if he wins a starting job, even greater for him. But there were only so many places that were going to even want a quarterback. There weren't a lot of places that were going to want a starter. So you start to limit your available options. When you limit your available options and you don't interview well, you don't go and do all of the combine stuff for a bunch of teams, you've already limited a lot of what you were going to do. So that's the Shedeur Sanders part of it. Yeah. For Nebraska, though, and I don't know if you hit on this, but Nebraska had two guys drafted. You get your Philadelphia Cornhuskers. So great to see Ty Robinson going there. Awesome to see Thomas Fedoni drafted. He was one that was in this draft for the Huskers that it was kind of like, this is a little bit of a chance. And mm-hmm. Matt Rhule had said last week that he was pushing for Fedoni to go to the draft. And it was nice to see Fedoni get that chance, get drafted, and be one of those guys that has a destination. And then you have several other signed undrafted free agent deals. But after having nobody drafted last year, I thought Ty Robinson went a little bit. I thought he could have been a day two guy. But it was nice to see two guys go off the board for the Big Red. And like Matt Rhule said last week, the large majority of these guys, anyone that was here for multiple years out of high school especially, and didn't transfer in, like Jamal Banks and Isaiah Nayor, those are Scott Frost guys. Those are previous staff guys that were brought in, played at least a year, and then obviously 2 years under Matt Rhule, and you have to imagine that the development took a pretty good increase over the last couple of years because it wasn't that Scott Frost and company couldn't recruit, it's just you didn't see a lot of development. This current staff, you look at them as they're going to develop the hell out of you, whether you're a 3 or a 5-star. So it was good to see that bridge happen. And Matt Rhule has always been one to give credit where credit is due. That was good to hear him last week. And obviously you see Ty and you see Thomas go on Saturday and you have those undrafted free agent deals. Tommy Hill not anywhere at last check. Yeah. And I know he's had the foot injury, but that's a guy who early in the fall last year, and I know if you go early in the fall last year, Shedeur Sanders was the number one pick in the NFL draft. But early in the fall last year, Tommy Hill was looking like a late first round, maybe second round guy.
Yep.
And he's just been banged up. He's had the foot and he missed some time and he missed the bowl game. And, that's a guy who has all the talent in the world and all the athleticism in the world. If he can get that foot right, I think there's got to be somewhere that takes a chance on him and says, hey, I know you're not healthy, but we're going to throw some pennies your way so that we've got the rights to you. And I just don't understand why that hasn't happened yet.
It's a good point about Tommy Hill, because when you think about the unrestricted free agents or the undrafted free agents, I should say, you think about the diamond in the rough, if you will. And I know there was, and not to belabor the Shedeur Sanders part of it, but I know that there was a theory that he should have, if you're going to go to the 5th round, you should just go completely undrafted because then you can negotiate terms on your own and you're not held to a draft slot and everything like that. But that's neither here nor there. And also a bit of a gamble. But the Tommy Hill part of it is, if you know that it, once upon a time that did exist and we're not so far removed from that type of talent, that I remember the same thing, Caleb. I remember people talking about him as possibly a first rounder. In fact, in a mock draft last year, right around this time last year, he was shown up at the end of first round on a couple of them. I remember CBS Sports had him as a late first round, one of the maybe third or fourth corner that would have been taken in the NFL draft, which was remarkable. And that shows you, for a guy that has been put on both sides of the football and then finally found a home, return to the original home that he came over for, and that was playing corner, that I feel for Tommy. I think that there was some time lost in that development process when they were messing around with what they wanted to ultimately do with him. And I remember when Matt Rhule talked about Tommy Hill in his first year, I will admit I rolled my eyes because the whole Tommy Hill thing, I was kind of starting to move past it. No, the guy's got a lot of ability and he's a great guy. A lot of guys seem to really gravitate to him because of that personality. But we'd seen so many boom or bust moment with him that I wasn't ready to necessarily believe Matt Rhule. And then all of a sudden, especially the first half of Matt Rhule's first year, you start to think, okay, all right, now I'm starting to see what they're talking about because he's making a lot more good plays than bad. And most of them, and really the only play that sticks out to me to where he got beat was against Colorado in Boulder on what was a pretty key moment of that game. But after that, rebounded very well. He was very consistent, and he started showing that not only that speed, but that ability to lock down. I mean, dare I say, he was a lockdown guy for a while. So I bring that up because he does possess that. There's a reason that he was being forecasted as a potential first rounder because of that skill set. Injuries and maybe just, again, having a bad year kept him from having his name called this last weekend. But I wouldn't give up on the fact that he could still be a part of a franchise and eventually be able to unlock that now with a little bit of that pressure off of him of what he needs to do, just find a landing spot, be able to work with an organization and that defensive coordinator and those coaches and that secondary coach, and be able to refine what we know already exists with Tommy Hill. It's just a matter of, can he get to that level again?
There were so many times that he was the best player on the field.
Yep.
And like that includes Ty Robinson and Nash Hutmaker up front. Sorry, Nash, I'm very happy to not butcher your name every week now going forward. but you look at, so Tommy Hill, still undrafted free agent, along with MJ Sherman, Ramir Johnson, Bryce Benhart, Brian Buscini. I know that those are guys that nobody had looked outside of Tommy Hill for those five. Nobody was looking at those guys as getting drafted and then being immediate signings. Ramir Johnson, we know, has been banged up. MJ Sherman, I think, has got a ton of potential. You got to see where he ends up. Bryce Benhart could maybe be one of those. Like, Nebraska has done a really good job of offensive linemen that maybe went, oh, they didn't necessarily shine, but they played a lot of football in Lincoln. And then, oh, man, they got a 5+ year career in the NFL. So hopefully he can find a landing spot. And Brian Buscini, I know Rhule was really hyping him up last week because of what he was able to do. He won a Big Ten award. And then last year, just like he had to step in. He was banged up last year. And in I know things weren't like all Big Ten punting. But for what he had to do when it was like it was just him. Like he's doing kickoffs, he's doing punts, he's getting run over. That guy was an absolute warrior, and I think they should be able to for spot out there for him to at least come in and kick the ball around and see if he can work something out. Other guys who have signed: John Bullock to the Buccaneers, Ben Scott to the Buccaneers, Isaiah Nayor with the San Francisco 49ers. Carolina Panthers have signed Isaac Gifford. And then Baltimore Ravens took both Nash and Jamal Banks. So that's the latest on where any of those guys are for the NFL. If any of the other undrafted free agents like Tommy, MJ, Ramir, and so on, if they do sign, we'll update a lot of our NFL Central NFL Draft Central stories at HuskerMax.com and Nebraska Cornhuskers on SI. Real quick, I'll just go back to the Husker games with the equipment sale. I was there at 6:30, Nick, or 6:50. I left home at 6:30 to go pick up a buddy. 6:50, I'm in line. We're about 60th deep. We're about 60 deep, and we are there more than 2 hours before the thing opens. So yeah, there were people there plenty early. There were people that had like the little kid wagons.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Yeah,
because they were ready ready to go fill stuff up. And I was just like, man. So I went and I wanted, and maybe you can actually help me out with one of these. I wanted a basketball jersey. That was number two on my list. I was able to go grab that. Number one was like these old, like sideline chairs, cream colored, okay. Said Huskers on them. And by when I walked through the door, they were the last ones were being picked up. And I was like, okay, that was my number one. That's gone. Let's go to the jerseys. Good thing I got there because there was only like four or five left. Okay. So I grab one that I like. I go, I really like that design. Looks like it'd be about my size. Worked out. I got it. I love it. It's 33. I just say that it's Scottie Pippen, but Mike Fox is a nice second on that one. And then it was, I wanted a baseball helmet because they said they had baseball helmets for $10 and I did not see a single one in there. So then I had a list for other people who couldn't be there. And that was one of the things about, for me, was I knew there were a lot of people who could not be there, let alone be 1,500 deep in line.
Yeah.
So for a few people that weren't there, it was baseball or softball gloves. It was shoes. It was softball jersey. I got none of that. I got none of my list for other people. I had at least a dozen things on like in my little notes app, and I got one off of there. And I was 60th in line. Now, I wasn't going in for a specific football jersey because I wasn't paying $50. I wasn't paying $250 for one of the helmets. And then those had a specific item limit on those. You could only do two of the helmets per person. So, like, I wasn't going for those. And I know a lot of people were. But for my list, I thought I had a very modest list. And to only come out with one and being 60 deep, I was like, wow, people picked through this very quickly. If they were the first 50 people in line, it ain't good for them. That's why they were there. I did end up walking around, though. I got a pair of basketball shorts. I got some sweet red sweatpants that I actually wore playing slow pitch softball yesterday. God, those things are comfortable. My wife is going to hate those because she's going to see me in them all the time. I was able to find a nice little dry fit shirt for my daughter and some shorts that she'll grow into. Got her some pom-poms for $1 each. Like there were really good deals because I was there working at the time when Nebraska men's basketball did the office theme night. I didn't get a mug for my wife that said world's best fan. So I was able to grab one of those for $5 and she was super happy. So I got stuff for me and my family, which was nice to just walk around and see that. But there were definitely people that took it to the extreme, Nick. And this is the part that I think if you're looking at these surplus sales, these equipment sales. And I don't know what kind of, let's say Nebraska is able to do this next year. Let's say they run it back for the Husker games, start to finish the way they do the whole day. And I want to talk about volleyball here in a minute as well. I think one of the things they'll need to do is they'll need to go through each item and say, here's a limit.
Yeah.
They did that with the football helmets. Maybe with the football jerseys, maybe it's not two, but maybe it's five. Maybe there's a limit there. The bobbleheads, maybe it's five, whatever it is, because there was a guy who had a massive box full and was turning kids away asking for one. They're like, hey, can we have one of those to go buy? And he was like, no. Now, I posted on Twitter yesterday, like one of the marketplace listings that I saw. The John Cook bobbleheads are going for $10, Nick, $10. On Saturday. Steel. Listed for $80 on Facebook on Sunday. And that was one of the lower prices. And there's a guy who, like, you can find it on my Twitter page, but there's a guy very defensive about this is what the market prices are. And I'm like, man, the market price can be whatever it is. That doesn't mean you have to go be greedy. Like whatever it is. The university messed up by not putting limits on what people can buy. And yeah, you can still go resell if you buy within those limits. You can still resell one of the two helmets that you bought. I get that. But you don't, just because you can doesn't mean you should. And that's a part where I think there's a lot of people who couldn't be there or were super far back in line. They thought, let's show up at 7:30. Let's show up at 8:00. Maybe we'll just kind of stroll by the stadium at 9 and see what the line is. And that line is halfway to the John Cook Arena at the Bob Devaney Sports Center. That's disappointing. And there were a lot of kids in line too. There was a lot of shoes. I think people were wanting to get for their kids. There were gloves. Most of the gloves I saw were lefty gloves anyway. So that market I think was already limited, but that my big disappointment with the Husker games is that there were people that saw dollar signs instead of fandom. And that's the thing that I thought the equipment sale, the reason I was excited for it was the fandom, was that I had friends and family who couldn't be there that I was going to try to pick up items for them. And I know there were a lot of very similar people who went through that line and did the same thing. But there are also a lot of people, and like, there's no way to stop them. It's not exclusive to this fan base. It's not exclusive to this event, but there's a lot of people that saw fandom and instead turned that into dollar signs and said, I'm going to go make as much money as I can in here. The rest of you be damned. I don't care how long in line you've been here. I was here at 6 o'clock. I was here at 5:30. And I'm going to go in and I'm going to make a couple $1,000s out of this event. That's not why the university put this on. And so I think there's no way to stem that entirely, but maybe some more limits on some of the items that you're able to get. Maybe it's you have a bag this size and it's anything that you can fit in this bag. Like there's gotta be something. Yeah. I do hope the university runs this back though, from the equipment sale side of it, because it was fun going in there and just looking at a lot of the old stuff, getting an authentic jersey from more than a decade ago. I don't care how ugly the game was. This was a jersey that was on hand for a men's basketball game at the Devaney Center. Like yeah. That's cool to me. And then I'll just real quick on the football part. So full disclosure, I went to the equipment sale. I wasn't feeling great after, and I knew I wanted to go to the volleyball match later. So I went, well, they're only doing a little bit of live scrimmaging and some of the other activities. I'm just going to go home and nap. So I didn't go to Memorial Stadium for the football activities. I followed along on social media, and I followed along by texting with some people who I knew were there. Midland flag football, unreal. So that's interesting to see that part. And then Dylan Raiola get out there. Like there were some fun videos that came from that. Now from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock or however long the Nebraska football stuff went on. The word I kept the phrase I kept hearing back was, it's a tough hang. It's a little rough in here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there were two sides of it. There was the, what was the team doing and how did the team feel and what was the fan experience? The fan experience was clearly something that you saw it from the numbers of people that were in there, like hard to get into the events, hard to get into the stadium, but just like mentally be excited for everything that's happening. There was some fun stuff, obviously. Like it was fun to see video of Sean Callahan trying to catch a punt. Like that was fun. And I think there were a lot of people that had fun with that. It was fun to see who is the fastest Husker on the team? Right. 'Cause that's always a bragging thing. Like the wing eating thing at the end, like that was fun to see the video. Get the gloves off your hands, you pansies. Go in bare hand with this. It's a food eating contest. Not in there to give someone a manicure. Come on. Like there were some fun things. There were videos that came from it. But it just didn't sound like there was juice from the crowd in the way that you would want. It sounded like for the players, though, the players and the coaching staff and everyone out there, it looked like they were having a ball. Mm-hmm. And I think there's some of that. How do you get to where the team is obviously having a great time, but how do you get more from the crowd? I think that's something that the university is going to have to look really hard at over the next year if they want this format to stay for the Husker games on the football side.
Yeah, I would agree. When you were getting resituated with the computer, I brought up the one thing that I did like about everything that took place on the football side of it, going all the way to the flag football game, the women's flag football game, to the actual Nebraska scrimmage part of it, is there's, and I don't think this is the intention, Caleb, but I think for me, I immediately went there thinking about the personality of this team. And in events like this, you get a chance to, you know, guys without helmets, you're first of all, you're seeing their faces and you're seeing them interact and you're seeing them in their own element. You're seeing them have a blast with each other and with the coaching staff and being able to give each other a little bit of crap on certain things like that. And when you have a crowd that is able to be a part of that, they feel like they're a little bit more connected to the team because they're showing off that personality. That's why I thought the chasing three element to Nebraska football was a big deal, because when it comes to, and this is why I say I don't think this was intentional, but it has to be at least thought of, is that when you all of a sudden introduce the personality and the stories of these kids to the public and to this loyal fan base, I don't know about you, but if I have income that I'm willing to donate to the football program, I feel like I want to know a little bit more about what they are, what they're about. And these type of events are perfect for that. You get a chance to really see these guys not as non-robots, you know, as this football machine. All they do is they wake up, they eat, they work out, they go to class, they play football, then they do something else and they play football again. Like, you get to see, like, these are, they're just like how we would give each other crap or still give each other crap. They're having fun with one another. That, I think, resonates with the fan base. And I think if it does come down to, you know, I've always been a little reluctant on donating, but man, this team looks like they have a lot of fun. Boy, they really interact with the young kids. They engage with a lot of, like, with my son and my neighbor's daughter and son, and they just seem like they're good stewards of the program. You know what? I'd love to help that football program with the money that I have too. So I'm not saying they do this solely because they want to raise money, but I think that helps when you have that type of personality, it really as the common theme of this whole thing on Saturday.
Yeah, that's been one of the, it's come a long ways over the last couple of years, but like over the last decade, it's been tough to form a lot of connections with the football team. Part of that is, they have their helmets on. You don't see a lot of their personality in ways that you do with the other programs. And that was one of the things I remember talking with Jack Mitchell a couple of years ago on this, like just having a giant connection to, and the crowd having it as well, to the women's basketball program. And then you think the men's basketball team, even with all the transfers that it blew up with Casey, and you saw this year with Jawan and Bryce and some of those guys. And you obviously, a lot of it being the absolute success that they have, but the volleyball program, you see all of them. You see all of their personality without the helmets and the pads and everything kind of getting in the way. You see it with baseball and stomping on a plate and the guys take their helmet off, like in the celebration for the whole dugout coming out. Like, you get to see those things. Football doesn't necessarily have that. You're separated a little bit more. You're distanced a little bit more from the playing surface. And it's the chasing three thing. You're absolutely right. That's a very good point, is that that has helped bridge that gap a little bit. And I think Saturday was one of those things that I think was hoping to bridge that gap a little bit more, because it's a lot more personality than it is line up and play football. So I hope they keep this. I hope they keep this, because I don't think you're not getting a full spring game to come back. I think once you've got away from that and you get roster limits, I think that that's just gone. So I think there's going to be tweaks for that now. And it sounded like soccer went well also over at Hibner for Nebraska women's soccer. Now, I know you said like the main event was the equipment sale. And yeah, people were lined up and it was there. The juice at Devaney. Like, this day was leading up to volleyball. They absolutely nailed the bookends for the Husker games, with people getting up early, getting to the equipment sale, having the juice for that, going over, getting their breakfast runs, or going through the food trucks. I still think it was great for people that want to spend $10 and walk around inside Memorial Stadium with their kids. Like, all of that was there. But let's not kid ourselves. Saturday was about volleyball. Saturday was about Danny Busboom Kelly and the next era for Husker volleyball. I put up a video. You can find it at the Husker Max YouTube page, of the intro video and the team introductions. That place is so loud for those women. That place is so loud for this team. There is a connection to the players. And of course, the very last one announced, Harper Murray. Well, right before the libero. But Harper Murray, this fan base loves themselves some Harper Murray. She is going to go down. She's got this fall and another year left. She is going to be, if not already, one of the most beloved Huskers, regardless of sport. Some of that being, we get to see them so much more. We get to see the TikToks. We get to see the interactions. Now, on the playing floor, so I wrote a story. You can find this at HuskerMax.com as well, but I had a few takeaways. Harper Murray, I think, is a legitimate National Player of the Year candidate this fall as a junior. She's got a jump serve going. I think if you add that, her weapons are going to be insane. And not just the way they set her up in the offense as well. We saw last year her hitting from the back row a lot more because she took over as a sixth rotation player for Merritt Beeson, who'd been hitting out of the back row there. But you're getting a lot more of Harper offensively. We saw that defensively she's a juggernaut as well. So I think she's a legitimate National Player of the Year candidate. The middles for Nebraska are going to garner a lot of attention. We saw Andy Jackson take another step last year, but she hit a ball out of the back row that is still being talked about. Mm-hmm. And not just by volleyball people, but by, like, here, I love volleyball. I can talk about volleyball. There's a reason I'm talking about volleyball. Compared to, like, the Lincoln Arneals of the world, the Avid Volleys of the world, like, I'm a casual. I will talk about that hit that Andy Jackson had all the way to the fall until we get to see it in action again. It was insane. I've got it up in my volleyball recap. I embedded the video because it is insane. Rebecca Alec was also nuts. They had 11 kills each, 4 blocks each. Andy Jackson hit 556. Alec hit 524. If you can feed your middles and that be consistent, you're in the Final Four. Like, you are running over people if you have that. Now, the freshmen also played really, really well. You had some good standout performances as those freshmen introduced themselves. Particularly, I really like Tariah Sigler is going to be very good. Ryan Hunter is the real freaking deal. With that left hand, that's going to be fun to watch. I don't expect there to be a 6-2. Danny Busbum Kelly had run a 6-2 before, but Huskers have got two really good setters. It's Bergen Riley's job until it isn't, but Campbell Flynn, who is the reigning Gatorade High School Player of the Year, she's real good. She is real good. She's a left-handed setter, over 6 foot. She, like, when they have that set, her attacks, neither of them went down, but that's going to be something really, really dangerous. So if anything were to happen to Bergen, you've got a very good one there. And we just don't know on the Lexi Rodriguez replacement right now. You had a pair of players alternating sets in Lainey Choboy and Olivia Mauch. So you're going to have to figure that out. But Nebraska wins all 4 sets. They absolutely run away with it. You see the team having fun. You had former Husker Allie Badenhorst back with the Omaha Supernovas dancing out on the floor and having, like, the crowd absolutely loved anytime the big screen showed her. That arena was juiced. The Terry Pettit Court at John Cook Arena in the Bob Devaney Sports Center in Lincoln, Nebraska, United States, Western Hemisphere, Earth, Solar System, Milky Way Galaxy, whatever. That place was pumped. That was a great way to cap off the Husker games. And this volleyball team definitely showed that there is no hitch in the giddy up in this transition from John Cook to DBK. It was exciting to be in there. I know you were busy with Maryland out in Maryland as the baseball program was starting to come back and you know, win game 2 and then take the series eventually. And we'll talk about that here in a second. But were you able to just hear anything from back home on the volleyball match?
Yeah, it was. It's funny you bring up the Andy Jackson moment, too, because that was something I was talking with Sports Information Director Jared Meister when we were tracking it as much as we could and seeing just the overall dominance that Nebraska had against a reputable program in Kansas, too. Now, the other part about it is it didn't surprise me at all, the overall buildup, because – We know that the two unique things that this volleyball program does in the offseason, one is when they go to a small town in Nebraska, they sell it out, and that's essentially, you know, their, whatever you want to call it, whether that's their spring game or just their non-conference spring match, that that is such a unique thing and such a cool thing to do. But then to introduce this as part of a what is typically owned by football on that spring game Saturday, to have this and to kick it off, this new little format that maybe we'll see going forward every year from now on with a volleyball match to cap off the evening, it just so happened to have the heir apparent and the new coach. And as you mentioned, that transition with Danny Buzzboom Kelly, where I think Nebraska fans felt the call to action that it could have been Kansas, it could have been Kansas Wesleyan that they were playing. That call to action was clear that the fans had to remind, not that she needs it, but had to remind Danny Buzzboom Kelly of how absolutely, and not even close, how truly different this state is when it comes to supporting that volleyball program. And it has, it's funny you bring up the juice in the building, the juice in freaking April in an exhibition match that you're going to have big time NCAA tournament feels in there, because a lot of it, yeah, they feel connected to this team. That's a big part. But I think, in my opinion, the biggest part why that fan base, as they always do, but they felt, I think, a little bit more duty to do this, is to say, hey, Danny Buzzboom Kelly, this is what you came back to, and we've only gotten stronger when it comes to supporting this volleyball program. I can only imagine the chills that she had. Again, she knew what she was getting herself into. She's been a part of this before as a player, as an assistant coach, and now as the head coach replacing a legend. And it's funny you bring up the court names and the arena names too. Heck, she might be the next one to have her name on a part of that property there too. But I think it's such a unique situation when you're out of season and you play this exhibition game, and you wouldn't even be able to tell. You wouldn't even be able to tell that it doesn't mean anything. There's nothing on the line in a statistical or standing standpoint, that this is just a Saturday night playing volleyball against another Division I power program. And look at what we do. Look at how we support this program. I can only imagine what DBK was feeling after, well, before, during, and after that whole experience.
And Kansas is going to be pretty good. They're in a transition as well with Matt Ulmer, who was at Oregon for the last few years. He's brought in some pretty good players. Kansas is going to be good. Nebraska is going to be elite. For some of the volleyball people that I talked to, they said they're getting the like 2000 John Cook vibes his first year. Yeah. In the transition taking over, there's so much talent that is here. The offense looks just like it looks a little bit faster. Like there's more options. They're opening that up a little bit freer. The defense, I think we've got to see where that develops, because having Lexi Rodriguez back there was a cheat code. So what does it look like with your block? What does it look like with different folks running around back there, the littles? But Danny Buzzboom Kelly said after the match, this is the deepest room of liberos she's ever coached. So somebody's going to have to rise to the top on that. And Nebraska volleyball will play another match this Saturday out in Ord, America, against South Dakota State. I believe that's going to be on Nebraska Public Media, but I'll have to look that back up. But yeah, it will be broadcast. It will be televised. And some of us spent all weekend watching the Big Ten Plus because of Husker baseball out on the East Coast, not here part of the Husker games. It was wild to see baseball and softball on separate coasts while all this stuff is going on here in Lincoln. But Friday, just from following it around, Friday just felt like, ugh, here we go again. It's a bad weekend. And I know baseball's not that way, because every game, that there's new pitchers, it's new scenarios, it's all of that. But Friday was just like, ugh. I hate this. I hate where this season is going. And then a win on Friday, and then, as I titled it in my recap story, a shellacking on Sunday. The bats didn't just come alive. They were juiced, it yeah. seemed like, a little bit on Sunday. Let me start with asking you this. Have you ever been a part of a game where both teams had grand slams?
No. The closest thing I had to that would have been 2018 Wichita State. Alec Bohm was on that Wichita State team. He had a grand slam, and I believe it was Joe Acker who had a three-run bomb in that game. And the wind was ridiculously blowing out to left in that game. So that was the closest that I'd ever had where each team had one. And it was funny, the wind, what's it was more advantageous on the mound for Saturday and especially Sunday, but both Swanson and then Hollis were able to find, actually, no, it was Hakopian, was able to find that one area where it was pushing out there to right center. So just taking advantage of the elements. But I mean, what a response that you said on Friday, we left the ballpark, and I know the team definitely felt it too, but this is where I'm going to give this team a lot of credit, because these are the series that they need to win. I feel like just from a statistical standpoint, that you're through the part of the Big Ten in that schedule where it's a meat grinder, and they had it. I mean, they faced UCLA, they faced Iowa, USC is no slouch either. And so they went against those teams more front loaded in the conference schedule, especially on that really odd 11-day road trip out in LA. So, you know, what would they have left in that final stretch? You looked at the, you know, the clearing of that schedule and thinking, okay, if they still have something left, they could take advantage of that back end. And Friday against Northwestern, similar situation. You feel like you tie that game up and you're in good shape. And then all of a sudden they get a kind of a bloop RBI, two RBI single to eventually win that game. Nebraska has to respond. And it's a daunting task knowing that you have to show up on a doubleheader day and win both of those games if you want to win a series. Nebraska did that. And they pounded Northwestern in the second game, much like what we saw yesterday with Nebraska and Maryland. And that, so the response, and it start with how Will Bolt challenges his team after those moments. And there is that veteran presence on this team that still obviously gives a very large damn. And so they responded very well, I thought, on Saturday, especially when you have the delay. You wake up, you think you're going to be playing at 2 o'clock. Then all of a sudden you find out you're playing at 4 o'clock. You're sitting around a little bit longer. These guys have been through enough of it, though, that it shouldn't faze them. But they came out, they responded extremely well. They got all over Maryland pitching then. And then yesterday, I mean, we've seen Nebraska, when they're not able to hit the strike zone, runners get on base, teams usually find a way to make you pay for that. Nebraska was able to take advantage of that in that first inning, where their starter could not throw a strike. He could not, Andrew Johnson could not find the strike zone whatsoever. But then this is where I got nervous. It's all of a sudden bases loaded, nobody out. It's 0-2. All of a sudden he works ahead of a hitter, and it happens to be Gabe Swanson, much like he did the week before against Northwestern with the grand slam. He's in a 2-strike count, and he is able to deposit one over the outfield wall. And then at that point, you could see there was, I would say, maybe just a little bit tense, because if he strikes out, all of a sudden you're a ground ball away from getting out of that. He hits that over, and then all of a sudden the floodgates went wide open. And the only moment of that game that had a little bit of drama is that grand slam that you mentioned that Maryland had, and Hakopian, all of a sudden they put up a 5-spot. You're thinking, well, they're back in this game. It's still a 6-run game, but they're back in it. Nebraska responds with a 5-spot. So essentially, after Nebraska put up the 5 runs after Maryland did it, the game was over, because Maryland had the will absolutely beaten out of them. And that is a good sign, because when these series against the favorable schedule, you got Minnesota, very similar situation. There are things, this Maryland team could hit it. Okay, Northwestern was also offensively pretty decent. Common theme with some of these teams is there's some pop in their offense. It's the staffs that have been struggling. So can Nebraska continue to take advantage of those opportunities, especially with this series against Minnesota? You got Michigan. That is going to be a big one, because Michigan's also a huge RPI opportunity as well. And I know people are probably laughing, come on, can we really talk about RPI? Crazier things had happened. Nebraska needs to get over 500, but they still have good RPI opportunities with tomorrow with Kansas State, still got Creighton one more time, and that Michigan series are all good RPI opportunities. So if you win those games, you're over 500. Crazier things have happened. You got to get in the 50s when it comes to the RPI to have a shot at an at-large. But more than anything, get to Omaha. And if it all started today, Nebraska in a 4-way tie for 11th, but they own the head-to-head against two of those teams. They don't play Michigan State, so you don't have the traditional head-to-head against them. But you win those series, these next few, and don't forget Purdue on the road to wrap up the regular season. If they can win those series, and I would say even at this point, when you have the 9 conference games left, you got to figure out a way, I think, to get 5 more. You get 5 more, and I think you're in the Big Ten tournament. You're probably not even sitting as a number 12 seed. You're probably somewhere between 10 and 9.
Yeah, play your way into Omaha. That's what matters right now. Kansas State and Creighton matter for your RPI and hoping for that at-large bid. But take care of business on the weekends. Get yourself to Omaha. And that new format, which looks fun, I'm interested to see how the pool play plays itself out, because I know like the Pac-12 had it. I think the ACC had it. It's interesting to see what that format is. And Husker fans, and I think everyone in the Big Ten baseball family, will relearn that this is a format that's actually happening over this next month. Yeah. But like you said, starting with K-State and a little bit of a homestand, one last thing on that game yesterday, 19 hits for Nebraska baseball. That's good to see. It wasn't just like a lot of walks.
Yeah.
They were putting the ball in play, hitting it all over the yard. And in that fourth inning, that five-run fourth inning for Maryland, only two of those runs were earned, because there were a couple of Husker errors. It's not that Maryland went and said, okay, we're getting back in this game. Nebraska helped them out a little bit. And if you take that away, there's even less life for the Terps when you get halfway through that game. Back at home, like you said, tomorrow, home this weekend. Because the Huskers, and I like that Nebraska Athletics is doing this, I'm going to plug this. I will be out there. The Ballpark Bash, 11-2, May 3rd. So coming up this Saturday, there's going to be face painting, balloon making. There'll be a prize wheel, obviously concessions, inflatables. I'm taking my daughter out there. This will be out at Haymarket Park. It'll be between Bolin Stadium and the baseball field. So I'm looking forward to that, because it's family friendly stuff that you can go out and it's entirely free. It's entirely free right there. Obviously, if you're out there, you may as well go to a game or go to both games if you can. Mm-hmm. But I love that there's a family-friendly thing. We just had the Husker games and all the stuff this past weekend. I'm taking the family out to Haymarket this Saturday for the Ballpark Bash. I encourage you guys to go do that as well, because I think it's so much fun to get out and be around other Husker fans and be around fun stuff like this, Nick. I know you'll be a little bit busy, but I will take in the face painting for you.
Appreciate that. Yeah, come on up. I want to see what the face painting looks like. Make sure you wear the newly found basketball jersey too, real quickly too, because we love good stories. And in that onslaught yesterday, the pride of Utah, Nebraska, Hayden Lewis gets his first hit as a Husker. It's an RBI double, and he smoked it to right center field. I loved it. Louis got one. It was great. It was awesome.
Make sure you check out all of our stories, HuskerMax.com. Subscribe to the Husker Max YouTube page as well. If you're not doing that already, click the notification sign, so every time Nick and I go live between our very busy schedules, you're able to jump on and listen to us as well. Nick, looking forward to listening to you from some more ball games, and hopefully I see all of the rest of you guys at the Ballpark Bash on Saturday. I'm Caleb Henry. That's Nick Handley. Go Big Red.